welcome to this episode of Let's Talk About by Kangaroo Minds. I'm Merika, and our topic for today is the brain, the mind, and mental health. To have this conversation with us, we have Mr. Kumar Bagrodia, founder of NeuroLeap, an applied neuroscience company which leverages brain-computer interface technology for better mental health and brain enhancement. Kumar has also attended, chaired, and spoken at several regional, national, and international conferences, and has also had the honor of being invited by the Honorable President of India to speak on innovation. However, before we begin our conversation today, we would like to put out a trigger warning for our audiences. If at any point during this conversation, should you find any of the topics triggering or distressing, we urge you to take a step back and look after yourself. Should you need any additional support resources, you can also find them on our website. Now, without taking much time, let's dive in to hear more from him. Welcome to the episode, Kumar. It's an absolute pleasure to have you with us today, and we're really looking forward to, you know, the insights that you're going to bring with your work and your understanding in this space.
Thank you. A pleasure to be with you.
So, you know, before we get into more of the tech stuff, I think I'm going to ask you one of the more basic questions to start off the conversation. And I think that would be around, you know, how would you distinguish between the brain and the mind? And, you know, how does that fit in with the conversation around mental health?
You know, it's an important question and a very important and basic differentiation. Mind really is an intangible. You can't touch it. You can't see it. The brain, on the other hand, is your tangible organ. And the mind really is a manifestation of your thoughts, reasoning, determination, memory, judgment, your ideals, values, all of that, which are honestly generated from the brain. So a bad analogy, but think of the brain as hardware and the mind as software, right? Unfortunately, what we keep thinking is to upgrade only the software. So whether it is self-help books or videos or great content, and it's all good, it's all important, but you're trying to upgrade only the software whilst letting the hardware honestly degenerate or deteriorate over time.
So in that context, would you then be, look, you know, how would you look at mental health?
So, you know, mental health cannot be looked at in isolation away from the body. And I say this with the context of the brain. If you have an unhealthy brain, you cannot for a long time expect to have good mental health. Right. Let me take a step back here and talk about the subconscious here. A lot of what we try to change or alter in our mental health practices is using consciousness. Right? So we want to be mindful. We want to be conscious of what we eat, what we read, what we see, what we hear, what we say. And that's great. But the problem is that out of our, let's say, 100% mental makeup, only 1 to 10%, depending on what you're doing, maximum of 10% of what your mental makeup is your conscious mind.
Right.
The remaining 90 to 99% is governed by your subconscious, which is all the processes going on in the brain. So now think about it. You're trying to improve your mental health, which is 90% subconscious, but most of the time you're using that small top 1 to 10% consciousness window to impact the remaining 90%. It's like trying to clean up the tip of the iceberg and hoping that the remaining iceberg, you know, the remaining portion is clean and taken care of. It's not going to happen.
Right. So I think that brings me more into, you know, the work that you're doing around, you know, brain mapping and brain enhancing. So first, looking at the brain mapping part, you know, can you give us a bit of, you know, an insight into the science behind brain mapping and how that works?
Sure. Let me tell you a little bit about why we should look at mapping your brain.
Right.
Right. So like we discussed, that the brain really is, you know, the center for all your thoughts, actions, beliefs, memory, judgment, etc. But more importantly, why should we be looking at the electrical energy in our body? So as, you know, physics 101, we all know our body is made up of atoms, and atoms at the last level have electrons. And what are electrons doing? They are exchanging information, which is really energy. So when we are mapping the brain, what are we really doing? We are putting sensors on your scalp. Now, these sensors don't pass any electric current. They are not passing any magnetic waves, no ultrasound, no X-ray, no sonography. Nothing is going into your brain through those sensors. All they are doing is reading and recording the electrical energy being transferred across the various neural pathways within your brain. So our brain has approximately 100 billion neurons with a B.
Right.
And these 100 billion neurons have 1 raised to the power of 10,000 connections. So that's about 100 trillion connections where synaptic activity takes place, exchange of information, exchange of energy takes place. All we are doing in the brain mapping is trying to understand how is that information flowing within these pathways. Without getting into too much jargon, you know, we are looking at the different frequencies, delta, theta, alpha, beta, gamma. We're also looking at the power. We're also looking at coherence. We're trying to understand whether there's too much data going or at too high speed in certain areas where it shouldn't be, or the vice versa. So it's a 30-minute recording when we map your brain. We just take in about 500,000 data points. Right? An important thing to note here is, several people ask us that, oh, will you be able to read our thoughts, you know, get our secrets, our memory, our passwords? And let me clarify, no, we don't have that ability. That technology is not there currently, right? All we are doing is taking the electrical energy, but we are reading it at very high speed.
Right.
And this is important. One second has 1,000 milliseconds. We are reading your brainwave data once every 32 milliseconds.
Okay.
Means in 1 second, we would have read your brain waves about 30 to 35 times.
Right.
And the reason why we are doing that is we want to get your subconscious data, not what you're doing consciously. Because everything that we do is geared towards understanding and enhancing your subconscious.
Right. So, you know, just moving that little ahead, you know, since you said that, you know, you're picking up data every, you know, about 30, 35 times per second, what are some of the insights that you do get from the brain mapping?
Yeah. So once we take this data, also, I must add that we don't ask you any psychometric questions, or there are no, you know, Q&As or batteries to, you know, take. The only thing we need from you is your date of birth, your gender, and whether you're left or right hand dominant, right? Because that helps us understand certain aspects of the brain.
Right.
After the 30-minute recording, it takes us about 12 hours or so, and the data is run through a large database, a normative database, through algorithms to understand which neural pathways are showing activity which is suboptimal or which is dysregulated from normal.
Right.
Some of the areas that we can easily look into, for example, anxiety. So we can look at those neural pathways which are usually known to be responsible for anxiety, anger, temper, things like that, fear, phobias, and see how is the data performing on that network.
Right.
Or, for example, mood. Now, when I say mood, it could point to things like where we are looking at symptoms related to depression or bipolar disorder, right? or post-traumatic stress disorder. Or, for example, we look at attention. And that's a really important one because several people, and we've noticed this now, and not just for children who have ADHD, but even adults who have undiagnosed attention issues, and they confuse it with temper or they confuse it with memory, but it is actually an attention issue where we see that the attention network is dysregulated or is functioning suboptimally.
Right.
And network after network, there are about 10 major, if I can call them, information superhighways, you know, in the brain, which are looking at your key cognitive functions as well as your key emotional, behavioral, I would say, attitudes and habits. So we are looking at addiction, obsession, compulsion. We can even look at chronic pain or your autonomous nervous system. We are able to look at your learning abilities, your social skills. How comfortable are you in, let's say, you know, large gatherings or smaller ones? Executive functions. So looking at your decision-making ability, critical thinking, reasoning, ability to take executive action, so on and so forth.
So, you know, moving forward, since you said that there's a whole range of things that the brain mapping provides, how do you think these results can, you know, in that case, aid mental health professionals, especially given that, you know, you look at the pathways, looking at anxiety or obsession or moods? How do you think sort of all that together can, you know, be beneficial to a professional?
So there are two or three ways to think about this. And I think one of the key factors is that people need to realize that a lot of our current state of mind, whether it is fear or grief or sadness or trauma, has got to do a lot with the environment around us, right? And many a times, just when that environment changes, you feel better or worse.
Right.
It's also got to do with the food you consume, the amount of sleep you had, exercise or lack of it thereof. I'm not sure whether the current mental health diagnosis takes all of this into account. Mm-hmm. And I see hundreds of clients who come to us who've, I would say, in a rush, been prescribed an antidepressant, or in a rush, been given a diagnosis of ADHD or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they are on medicine for years and years, sometimes decades. Right? What if you had a tool to be able to look at the neurobiological response that your body is providing, given the environment it is in? So yes, sometimes changing an environment itself is all that's required. Many a times, the problems are now deep rooted and just an environmental change is not going to help. Right? So along with doing a conscious analysis where the client himself or herself is responding to questions to say, how am I feeling? How am I doing? So on and so forth. What if you were able to get a fairly objective, involuntary data from the brain?
Right.
So think of it like, doing an analysis of somebody basis only the symptoms that they give, which is currently what the practice is. Right. On the basis of symptoms, you do an analysis. But as we know, just because you have a cough and a cold doesn't mean you have COVID.
Right.
So we have to move away from pure symptomatic understanding of mental health to a more objective data-driven understanding. And I must clarify that we are not a mental health diagnostic, because the brain and mind are far too complex in the current situation to have a 100% medical diagnostic just by reading data. But we can get very, very, very close, very close.
Okay. So, one of the things, as you said, that, you know, like when you're mapping the brain, there are a lot of things that come out. And, you get close to a diagnosis, effectively, let's say. So just keeping that in mind.
I prefer to call it an assessment.
Okay. So let's say that that assessment that comes out of a brain mapping exercise, how conclusive would you say that is to, let's say, you know, picking up a mental health condition as opposed to a diagnosis from a mental health professional, given that, you know, so many things go unnoticed or unexplored, as you mentioned, you know, when doing a mental health diagnosis with a professional, because it's very symptomatic.
You know, to be honest, we are not aiming for a diagnosis.
Right.
So nowhere in our assessment report is about 25 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And nowhere in the report will we label an individual to say you have ADHD or you have high anxiety or you're suffering from depression. That is not the aim. I strongly believe that what really is depression? What really is high anxiety? Are we only referring to the DSM or the ICD and based on those, you know, symptomatic behavior patterns, are we saying that, oh, this is high anxiety or depression or bipolar? Why are we not looking again at the factors responsible for it? So our report is really only about stating a fact that, for example, your anxiety network is dysregulated.
Right.
Maybe by 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 standard deviations, which means you are seeing outlier activity. That doesn't mean that you are suffering from anxiety disorder, right? If you're an outlier, you might still be facing the benefits of having anxiety network, which is 5 standard deviations away, you know, absolute off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
You could be Captain Cool, you know, always calm under pressure. So this is the point where we do a consultation after providing the report, where we try and match, just verbally stating that we find 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever factors which are dysregulated, are you facing these symptoms?
Right.
Once we get that confirmation, we know that because of the dysregulation, these symptoms are there. And it's not that they are beneficiaries of dysregulation, which is entirely possible. And from there on, we can start helping you with the enhancement.
Right.
So there is an element of confirmation that we need either from the client or from the friends or family who are, you know, with the client. So, for example, several times we find people are living in denial, right? Whether it is anxiety, whether it is anger, whether it is addiction. You know, we have 19, 20-year-olds today who don't realize that they are addicted to vaping or addicted to marijuana or addicted to alcohol. They think that, hey, this is just their, you know, daily or weekly routine. But once we present the data to them saying your addiction network is hugely dysregulated, we don't know what you're addicted to, but are you consuming these things? And do you find that when you're not able to consume them at that moment, either you are irritated or you're not happy or you're just not having a good time? And once we get that confirmation, I think everyone realizes that, okay, you know, I'm in denial and this is probably addiction.
Right. So one side of it is, you know, as you mentioned, like people being in denial who could come to know that they are struggling or having a certain issue which comes up in the assessment. But could there be a case where, you know, you've come across that there is an issue which even the individual themselves has not been aware of, which has come through in an assessment?
Absolutely. All the time. I would say about half our clients, or 40-45% of our clients, are people who seemingly don't have an issue, who are just interested in high performance, who want to improve themselves, you know, every aspect of their lives, right? So they're already very fit, they are eating right, they're doing the latest diet, they're meditating, they're doing yoga, pranayam, running, whatever it is. And now they want to go out and improve their brain. And a lot of them, when they come to us, and, you know, we'll ask them once we present the report, and we'll say, hey, do you see that your attention span is low? And they'll say, no, you know, I pay attention in the meeting or in the boardroom, whatever it is, completely. And then my next question is, but do you see that you're really tired after that 1 hour meeting mentally and you need like a coffee break or a tea break or whatever? And 9 out of 10 times these professionals will say, yes, you know, I get drained out pretty easily. And I'm like, that's because your attention network here is so dysregulated. But consciously, you are putting all your mental resources and energy into staying focused or being attentive for that 1.5 hours that you're drained. So everything that you do, whether it's a emotional process or whether it's a, you know, a process of attention or focus or concentration or memory or maths or, you know, analytical skills, you are using tremendous energy from within the brain. I'm not sure if you know, but our brain consumes at least 1/3 of our energy. The body's 1/3 calorific consumption is through the brain. Which is why we will find, for example, at the end of a business day, if somebody comes to you, for example, with a new idea or a Excel spreadsheet to work on, and you'd say, oh, you know what? Let me look at it tomorrow with a fresh mind.
Right.
Has that happened?
Right.
So here's my question. What is a fresh mind? The mind, as we know, is intangible. It doesn't tire. It's the brain which is getting depleted of energy and resources.
Correct.
So those are some of the things that we see pretty much all the time, whether it's for attention, whether it's for mood, whether it's for obsession, compulsion, several aspects come up in the assessment.
Okay. So now just moving a little ahead from, you know, the assessment part to the enhancement part. So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, like how does the brain enhancement work and how safe would that be?
Sure. So once we've done your assessment and we've got your baseline data, right? So network by network, neural pathways, we know how's, let's say, your attention network performing, right? So from here on, it's really just a game of using data objectively and classical operant conditioning or associated learning. What we do is we again have the client sit in a comfortable chair, place the same sensors on the head that were used for the assessment. So again, non-invasive, no magnetic waves, nothing going inside the brain. But this time, instead of the client sitting comfortably just with their eyes closed, we ask them to keep their eyes open and look at a computer screen for about 30 minutes, right? Each session is about 30, 35 minutes. What's happening in that session is we would have made a customized bespoke protocol for the client.
Right.
So for example, let's say in the assessment and in the consultation, we realize that the issue is related to attention, right? And the client says, yes, I agree. I want to improve my attention, right? We will look at those specific data points which are associated with attention. And in the next half an hour, we will give the software a protocol to say, every quarter second, please map the brain 7 or 8 times, which is the subconscious. We are mapping the subconscious. And if the data meets a certain criteria, a certain numeric benchmark, then please reward this brain. The reward is simply a light and a sound and a numeric score which appears on that screen.
Right.
So imagine for the next 30 minutes, the client sitting comfortably, just staring at the screen. And when I say staring, it's really pretty much just getting bored, right? You don't have to apply your conscious mind. That's the first rule. Because we don't want to train your conscious mind. This is not meditation, right? This is not doing pranayama or tratnak meditation where you want to be focusing on a certain aspect or doing mental math or anything of that sort. We want you to get bored and only have one single realization that as and when you see the light come on and the sound being played and the numeric score being given means you have been rewarded.
Right.
So your subconscious brain knows that, oh, I've been rewarded, not rewarded, rewarded, not rewarded. Every time you're rewarded and every time you're not rewarded, the neural pathways start learning what is the good activity. So throughout the session and in subsequent sessions, we keep increasing the difficulty.
Okay.
We keep raising the benchmark, the numeric benchmark. That once this benchmark is met, only then will you be given the reward.
Right.
So over a series of sessions, what we have done is we kept increasing the difficulty and your brain, the subconscious, actually starts self-regulating, which means it starts behaving in a manner which is for its better long-term interest because it's being rewarded correctly.
Right.
So over a period of 20 or 30 or whatever number of sessions, we have reduced the suboptimal activity, or we have reduced the dysregulation in that network. So the absence of dysregulation or the reduction of suboptimal activity means that network is automatically performing better.
So just, you know, you gave us the example of attention and, you know, improving an attention span. But what are some other areas in which, you know, the enhancement can help with?
So we've helped people with mood disorders, depression, bipolar disorder, anxiety, people get panic attacks or addiction, smoking, marijuana, alcohol.
Right.
Our latest one now where we've had tremendous success is eating disorders and food. You know, several people, I think, some people want to lose weight or just get fitter, but they might go to the best nutritionist or figure out the best diet plan, mm-hmm. but it doesn't work for very long because they are not able to stick to it.
Right.
And there could be several reasons. It could be dysregulations in your network responsible for willpower and taking executive action. It could be dysregulations in mood and anxiety. It could be dysregulations related to obsessions and compulsion. So either your mood eating, your anxiety eating, or you're compulsively eating certain foods, or you're addicted to certain things, or you just don't have self-control and willpower. All of these we've been able to correct. And, you know, people have lost like 20, 30 kgs in a matter of months, because they've been able to correct their lifestyle after our therapy.
Right. So I'm going to ask you another, you know, very specific case. But, you know, as you mentioned, eating disorders, obviously, the main thing here is that, you know, the person themselves recognize a problem and they want to work towards it, because it's not just, right. You know, because for a lot of people, comfort eating could literally be comfort eating, or, you know, eating disorders becomes a very tricky subject. But looking at migraines, for instance, we know that, you know, migraines have an underlying physical health condition, but they also have underlying mental health reasons sometimes, you know, for instance, how depression can trigger migraines. So do you think a brain mapping and an enhancement would be able to deal with both these aspects of a migraine?
Thank you for that question. And, you know, we've actually helped several people with migraines. Who've had, and most of them tend to be women, who had migraine, you know, right from puberty till, let's say, age 40, 50, even 55, 60, I think our oldest client. And, you know, from one extreme where the person would, let's say, get migraines every 10 days or 15 days, which would last for almost 2 days at a time, where you're not able to, live with any kind of sound or noise around you. You don't want any light. Everything should be dark and you're just taking painkillers. From that extreme, we've got people to getting a regular headache, which is for maybe 2 to 4 hours, and it comes once in 6 months.
Right.
So do we have cure? No, I don't like to use the word cure for anything to do with the brain or mind. But yes, can we get you to a way better place? Certainly. And we've done it all the time.
Right. I think, you know, you just mentioned the very interesting thing about, like, you know, using the word cure when it comes to the mind and the brain. And a lot of people do use it, you know, and especially in a mental health context. The concept of recovery is given quite a bit. And, you know, maybe sometimes, you know, as you rightly mentioned, it's just about better managing or just being able to deal with what you're going through. So do you think in view of that, for instance, would a brain enhancement help someone, like, reduce the psychiatric medication that they take? Or, you know, would it lead to a less need for professional help and therapy?
Absolutely. And again, I'm saying this out of experience. So in the last 4.5 years, several clients, we've been able to help them get off first sleeping pills, anti-anxiety medication, antidepressants, bipolar disorder medication. Yes, there is withdrawal effects, and people should be prepared to battle out withdrawal. But we have people now who are medication free for 3, 4, almost close to 5 years as well.
Right.
Who've been medication free and who were earlier on medication for 10, 20, 30 years. Some of them had maxed out the recommended dosage. They couldn't go any further. You start seeing the debilitating side effects, the lack of any quality of life, I would say. You're pretty much neutered, you know, mentally. You're just neutered with those medication. And unfortunately, we are living in a world where we've been missold to and misguided. There is zero evidence available, zero evidence that you should be on an antidepressant or an anti-anxiety medication or ADHD medication for years. There is no study that you should be on it for so long. So we've been able to help people with that. And I would encourage people to look at a life, if possible, not just using us. I mean, there are several ways where you can enhance your brain and enhance your mental health over a period of time. It requires a lot of grit, a lot of determination, a lot of patience to do it in a fine-tuned manner so that you can face the withdrawal properly and get over it.
I think because, you know, as you mentioned, that is one thing which a lot of people have that concern over, especially when it comes to psychiatric medication. Just given how not just it becomes a crutch at times, right? You have to be very careful when it comes to taking medication, because even with professionals, we've seen, especially even in a country like India, how overprescribed medication becomes. So I'm pretty sure for a lot of people, enhancement would be something to particularly look at coming off medication. Where do you think brain mapping and brain enhancement stands when it comes to looking at paradigms such as, you know, ethics and consent and confidentiality?
Sure. Great question. We maintain confidentiality or privacy of our clients and the data, just as any other, you know, organization which is dealing with sensitive data would do. We do get several clients who are willing to share their great experience with us, and we have those testimonials, etc. But otherwise, we don't, disclose their identity. Even when we do the analysis of the data, it is all anonymized. So it'll just say male, you know, 30 years old, left or right-handed, and that's about it, right? In terms of ethics, you know, we are not using this data for any other, you know, purpose. You know, there is no neuromarketing going on. We are not selling anything to you on the basis of your data. You know, we are not tracking your habits or behavior to be able to manipulate you or anything of that sort. You know, nothing in our technology, whether hardware or software, can force you to think in a particular way, right? It is only allowing the dysregulation to get reduced. That's it. So there's no you know, there's no magnetic wave which is forcing the brain to do a certain activity. We are not. We are only relying on the brain's inherent ability to self-regulate, right, which is the human brain knows what's good for it. We just need to give it that right impetus, and that's all that we are doing. So one of the things to know in the brain map is several people have come to us saying that, oh, you know, we took our child and we got his or her fingerprints and thumbprints analyzed, and we were told that he doesn't have an aptitude towards math and account, and he should be artistic or vice versa. Let me tell you, there is no science to back it, for the simple reason that the brain is neuroplastic, which means your behavior, your thoughts, your attitudes, your skills can keep changing over a period of time, right? It can either deteriorate or improve. Science has now proven that your brain has plasticity till the age of 94, which means till that age, you can physically alter your brainwave patterns through repeated activity, creating new habits, new attitudes, new behaviors. So please don't let anyone tell you that your child, on the basis of some thumbprint or fingerprint, cannot do certain things or can only do certain things. That is humbug.
So, you know, just lastly, as a parting word, what would you say to someone, you know, who's watching this or listening to this right now, who might be having a hard time with their mental health?
My first piece of advice would be, please do not think of mental health in isolation. It has a lot to do with your physical health. Every day I have clients coming and telling me, saying, oh, I believe in self-care. And, you know, when I have anxiety, I can't wake up, I can't get out of the bed. Or people are saying, you know, something happened and I'm really depressed and I need medication. And if I don't take this pill, I don't feel good. 9 out of 10 times, I have sent people back without doing any enhancement work. We're just at the assessment. We are saying, you know what? You're not very dysregulated. A lot of this is on the basis of your own actions and the consequences of those actions. This is my advice. Life is only about two things, and your mental health largely is about two things. One, the environment around you, which is perhaps outside your control, right? There are people who are going through a tough time, either career-wise or business-wise, or have problems at home or in the general community that they are in. And, you know, I feel bad for them because they can't do much about it at times. Sometimes they can change that environment, sometimes they can't. But there are certain things which you can do, which means certain choices you can make. And if you have the ability to make those choices, I would urge you to. So taking care of your brain, you know, sleep on time, get enough sleep if you can. Exercise. I know it's easy to say that, but most people will use, unfortunately, mental health issues as a crutch not to exercise. And that becomes a vicious cycle. If you don't take care of your body, you're actually not taking care of your brain. Right. The reason is your brain only needs oxygen and glucose. And if you give it less oxygen, it cannot survive. If you don't give it enough water, it cannot function properly. So when you exercise, you're increasing the oxygenation in your blood, you know, for your brain. When you're eating right, you're giving it the right kind of nutrition, the right amount of glucose at the right times, the right nutrients. So my honest advice is to actually look at yourself as a whole and say, you know what? If I want to have less anxiety, I have to exercise. If I want to be in a good mood, I have to exercise. Or play a sport, play a racket sport, meditate, do pranayama, do breath work. All of these things are important to you. If you're doing all of these, if you're eating right, exercising, meditating, all of this, and you're still not well, absolutely, you should try and figure out what is wrong. You know, is there a deep dysregulation? And we can certainly help you. But as a parting note, that is my advice to really take care of your brain first and then think about mental health.
So thank you for joining us and, you know, sharing all your insights with us today. I think it's been a very enriching session, and I'm sure, you know, for anyone watching this, they're going to gain a lot from just, you know, hearing your thoughts, not just around brain mapping and brain assessment, but just to even understand more on how, you know, the brain works and how the mind works, especially when it comes to mental health. And lastly, for anyone who's watching this today, you know, just look after yourself and look after your mental health, and know that, you know, if you are having a hard time, there's always help out there, and there's a lot that you can do. You can always pull into a support system and things do get better. So till next time, please stay well and stay healthy. Thank you.